Hello and welcome to episode 199 of the official EstablishTheRun.com podcast. My name is Adam Levitan, aka Adam Agassi, aka Novak Levitan. As always, I am joined by your favorite lawn care provider, the Lord of your top 150. It is Evan Silva. Evan, how's it going today?
Yeah, geez, I haven't even congratulated you on your big victory. So cap tip to you, man. That's awesome. Did you make some money or what, man?
Yeah, we made some money. And yeah, we embarrassed some of the soulless spreadsheet virgins, which I think was good. So it was a good match and it was fun.
Good.
For sure. On today's show, we are going to talk stacking, not from a macro big picture perspective like we've done before with Dink and Leone and Herzig across various episodes and articles. Today, we're going to talk about stacking from a micro perspective. In other words, which stacks are easiest and best to get, which are undervalued, which do we like early, which do we like late, etc. And again, stacking, I think, is an obvious strategy for these extreme top-heavy best ball tournaments. But as Leone's shown with the data, stacking is also a plus EV strategy for just your regular season long league. Like if you're in a competitive league and you want to finish first out of 12, there's still merit to stacking even just your regular season long league today. And then finally, most importantly for me, you guys know me, I find DFS to be the best, the greatest form of fantasy football. And obviously stacking is a huge part of that. So I think this is a good way to start thinking about that. Before we get into it today, I want to remind everyone this podcast is indeed brought to you by our friends at Underdog Fantasy. Best way to get ready for the season is to be in the real money best ball streets. Can upload our rankings for this format and get a really good feel for how you and the market views players. All ETR draft kit or bundle subs get $10 used on Underdog. New players on Underdog get $35 on top with the draft kit. Also want to note quickly, special price on our bundle package isn't going to be around too much longer. Get the draft kit and the in-season package for just $229. Head to the subscribe page to check it out. All right, let's get into it here. Evan's Sneaky Stacks article will be up in the draft kit later on this summer. I want to start with some maybe not so sneaky ones, though, that I think are still undervalued, Evan. And I'm going to talk about Seattle here to start. This is one that we were on last year, and we were counting our money early, perhaps prematurely. We blew our load too early on our Seattle stacks because through the first 6 or 7 weeks, it looked like that was going to be the stack that you needed to win. I think there's merit to thinking that this year, Seattle is going to play in a way like they did the first part of the year for the whole year. A lot to do with Shane Waldron. There's been so much chatter around Seattle and OTAs about them playing faster, playing quicker, getting the ball out faster. 22nd in neutral situation pace last year, 23rd in offensive plays per game. Those numbers have to go up. Also, I mean, God, they were so vertical last year, and I think defenses realized that. And now Shane Waldron's coming in. We're going to get the ball out quicker. We're going to run more slants, more outs, get the ball in our playmakers' hands quicker. From an ADP perspective, you can get them all because they all kind of fit nicely. DK Metcalf around the 2-3 turn, Tyler Lockett round 4 or 5, Russ Wilson round 6 or 7, and Eskridge is basically free. So I know you're on the
Chris
Seattle
Carson
stack.
Is
Chris
very
Carson,
affordable.
Chris Carson is around there.
Gerald Everett, well. You can get real late.
Gerald Everett, you can get real late. And so, yeah, what do you think about Seattle this year? What do you think generally about this whole idea of them playing faster? Because I don't want to be stuck with a Seattle stack if it's going to look like the last, I don't know, 8 games of last year.
Yeah, I mean, the nice thing about the Seahawks, I think, this year, and it was similar last year going into the year, is we know where the ball is going to go. DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, they have really big, secure target shares. I don't think we see Dwayne Eskridge come out of Western Michigan and make a big rookie impact on offense. Maybe later in the season he will. We did see Chris Carson's in-house competition lessen when Rashad Penny needed another knee surgery. Mm-hmm. And Carson, again, is an affordable part of this team stack. He's going in the RB20 range. I think we have him right around RB15, so we are above ADP on Chris Carson. And, again, you can get Gerald Everett late. And remember, he's following Shane Waldron from the Rams to Seattle. So those guys know each other. Shane Waldron is going to know the strengths and weaknesses of Gerald Everett. I love the addition, you know, not pertaining to the stack itself, but how it impacts the team of Gabe Jackson at guard, because he's always been an excellent pass protecting guard. And I absolutely am willing to buy into this notion that the Seahawks are going to play faster and a little bit more in the Rams likeness, because I just finished the Rams team fantasy team preview. And over the last 4 years with Shane Waldron on staff under Sean McVay, This team has finished top 12 in the NFL in offensive plays per game in three of the last 4 years. So they've been ripping off plays at a pretty lofty clip. And I really think that playing up tempo suits Russell Wilson's playing style. I mean, I think that, you know, if you were to name the quarterbacks in the league that perform their best when they're playing with urgency and they can play fast. I mean, this dude was, you know, a baseball player, a shortstop. He absolutely is in his comfort zone playing with urgency and playing fast. I think you think of Russell Wilson, top three among quarterbacks in that area.
Yeah. When it gets closer to the season, we'll have Pat Thorman come on to talk more about what he expects out of Pace for the Seahawks this year. But again, I'm optimistic. And one note from OTAs, which is kind of a throwaway because Pete Carroll is excited about everybody. He was asked to name one guy he thinks could break out this year on his team. He did say Gerald Everett. So I think it's something to watch. Gerald Everett is a very athletic player for sure. Other early round one that I like is Dallas. And I don't think it's not complicated here on Dallas. They finished 22nd in yards per play last year. But when Dak went down, they were third in yards per play. And I think they've tried to address the defense. It's still really bad. And from a talent perspective, my God, I mean, Cooper, Lamb, Prescott, Gallup, it's hard to get both Cooper and Lamb because they go so close to each other. ADPs there are 33 and 34. So it can be hard to get both of them. But I think Dak with one of Cooper and Lamb and then Michael Gallup, who I know we're going to talk about in the next episode. Some of you moved him up in your rankings a bunch. I think that one makes a lot of sense. So I don't think there's a lot to say here on Dallas. Expecting them to play like they did when Dak was healthy last year is just a no-brainer for them to be stacked up.
Yeah, and the offensive line coming back and the depth that they gained with the backups coming in and playing last year. I mean, they are absolutely loaded on offense. You mentioned him. I think that the component of this stack that really sticks out is Michael Gallup because he's a guy who had a lot of hype entering last year and for good reason. He crushed in the playoffs the year before, had a bunch of big games during the 2019 regular season, but then with CeeDee Lamb in the slot and Amari Cooper running the alpha routes, Michael Gallup kind of got lost, especially after Dak Prescott got hurt because he became the low percentage vertical guy and just never came together with Andy Dalton. So Michael Gallup profiles as basically the ideal post type, you know, buy low type of receiver. And I'm going to make sure to keep him, keep our rankings and our tiers ahead of his ADP. I have him way, way above his high stakes ADP right now. We'll talk about that a little bit in the next show.
Okay, last non-sneaky one I want to mention is the Ravens. And the reason I do want to mention this is because Evan, as we talked about, has Lamar Jackson ahead of Patrick Mahomes, or at least even with Patrick Mahomes this year. Patrick Mahomes' ADP is 35.6. Lamar's ADP on Underdog is 54.9. So right there, you're gaining a ton by starting a stack with Lamar. Now, Lamar's still not going to throw it a ton. And so I like skinnier stacks here. I don't like having Lamar with like three or four. I think one or two is fine. Mark Andrews, 61.1. His ADP and Marquise Brown, we're way ahead of ADP on Marquise Brown. As we talked about before, his ADP is around 93. We have him 84th in our Underdog rankings. I believe Evan actually might have him higher in his personal top 150. And so I think Baltimore, if you expect Lamar Jackson to bounce back, I know Ryan Reynolds has talked about MVP tickets on Lamar. Evan talking about Lamar outscoring Patrick Mahomes. I totally agree in fantasy. So I think that's one at least worth mentioning for another non-skinny one. Evan, I think either Andrews or Marquise Brown would be the ones for me to pair them with. I know you can make a case for Bateman, but who would you, if you could only pair Lamar with one, who would it be?
It would probably be Mark Andrews, again, from the standpoint that I think he is a guy that, you know, a lot of smart analysts, Leone, for instance, Herzik, I think was on this, thinking that Crane talked about it. Thinking that Mark Andrews could maybe be the number one overall fantasy tight end last year, he was considered a disappointment. He still finished fourth among tight ends, and he had like a really bad year. I mean, he just really didn't play well. Mm-hmm. But we saw in the two years previous to that he is a mega talent. And even last year, he was still sixth among 48 qualified tight ends in yards per route run. I mean, the dude is a baller. He left a lot of plays on the field last year, especially in that first half of the season. I think he was banged up in the second half of the year. So I think that you're getting him at a little bit of a discount this season. And so I'd probably go with Mark Andrews, but we're also ahead of ADP on Marquise Brown. But I really like about stacking the Ravens this year, and I'm cool with the narrow stacks on them because, you know, ultimately we expect their pass attempts to be limited. I mean, they finished number one in the NFL in rush attempts in back-to-back seasons. But you have a lot of continuity with this stack because you have the offensive coordinator, you got the quarterback, the number one receiver, the number one tight end, the stud left tackle, all returning. And then they made a bunch of like role player, I think savvy role player additions. We started with Kevin Zeitler at right guard, where Marshall Yander retired, you know, following the 2019 season, and they really didn't have a replacement for him last year. Rashad Bateman, who I think is the perfect stylistic complement to Marquise Brown, more of a possession receiver than Marquise Brown, but you know, a potentially dynamic possession receiver who can play the slot and play outside. And Ronnie Stanley, the best pass protecting left tackle in the league. And again, getting that discount on Mark Andrews. And I think we're getting a little bit of discount on Lamar too.
Yeah, for sure. And yeah, just beating ADP on all these guys. And the top tier, people are really aggressively attacking the top tier of tight end, i.e. Kittle, Kelce, and Darren Waller. There's a big gap in ADP down to the lesser tiers. Okay. People know about those. People want to hear about sneakier ones. And why don't we alternate here? Because I have some sneaky ones that I like. I really have two, maybe three that I want to talk about. You have a few that you want to talk about. Why don't you start with a sneaky stack you want to identify?
Well, we have talked about the Dolphins being a sneaky stack. And you know, and it's based on the fact that I think that people have just overcorrected on Tua and what his future is. Because, I mean, at this time, you know, a couple of years ago, like we were talking about, this guy might be the number one overall pick. He does end up going in the top five, even after having a catastrophic hip injury. He comes in, he doesn't play well. He really wasn't supposed to play last year for Miami. The playbook was not designed for him. It was designed by Chan Gailey, Ryan Fitzpatrick's boy, for Ryan Fitzpatrick. And I think that that played a big role in why in some of those games late in the season, you saw Tua coming out of the game because, I mean, he couldn't run the offense like Ryan Fitzpatrick could because the offense was designed for him. And so now I think that we've just, you know, we've just kind of jumped the shark in being too low on Tua. Now he's fully healthy. Now he's got a playbook that Chan Gailey is gone. He's got a playbook that is designed for him. And they put a ton of talent around him. And all of that talent is affordable in drafts. Mm-hmm. Will Fuller is right around wide receiver 40.
Devontae Parker's ADP is 114 on Underdog. We have him 85th. So, I mean, massive. Yeah, right. I mean, massive on Devontae Parker.
And he's even lower in Football Guys Championship ADP. Yeah. Massive gap there. I think Gesicki is very, very affordable. I think he could have a big season. I think this can be a three-receiver offense, just like they ran at Alabama with all those stud receivers and an 11-personnel offense where Mike Gesicki rarely comes off the field. I like their – you know, their offensive line, they're bringing back four stars and they traded up for Leon Eichenberg to play right tackle, a young, improving offensive line. I think that we've gone way too far negative on Tua. And I think that all the work that the Dolphins did around, things are really going to come together. We're going to see this offense take a leap.
Yeah, and for sure, if you're planning some three quarterback builds on Underdog, you can set up this Tua stack really easily. Like later round, don't spend a lot of capital on quarterback and set it up because Tua is basically free, as Evan said. A lot of people have given up on Tua completely. One that I want to mention is the Minnesota stack. I mean, Dalvin is a top two pick. I think we all agree with that. Justin Jefferson is a good pick at the 2-3 turn. I still think Thielen is fine at the 4-5 turn. I still like Irv Smith, and we'll talk more about the Irv Smith versus Conklin thing in the next episode. But man, this is a concentrated offense with explosive talent. It's exactly what I'm looking for. And the quarterback, Kirk Cousins, ADP is 144.9. It is not hard to get a Vikings stack if you think about it early on. And it can include two of these guys, Dalvin and Thielen, Dalvin and JJF, JJF and Thielen, JJF and Smith, maybe three of them. But man, it's concentrated. And again, I think that the Minnesota Vikings are going to surprise people this year on the defensive side of the ball and continue to put up good numbers on offense, just be a very solid team all around. And basically Cousins ADP makes this one really free. You don't have to use any ADP at all, any draft capital at all on Kirk Cousins at the quarterback position. So I like that one for sure. Any thoughts on that one, Evan?
Yeah. Another factor that I like about stacking the Vikings. And again, you know, this, when you're doing this, what you're trying to do is you're trying to get like the entire team to beat their ADPs, mm-hmm. You know, like all the Dolphins dudes, they're so cheap in drafts. Like, they could all smash their ADPs if they just take a step forward into like finishing like 12th in the NFL in offense, you know? And I think that the Vikings can do that. I mean, Justin Jefferson and Dalvin Cook, I mean, their ADPs are so high that they're going to be tough to beat, but they're sort of like the anchor early round pick, and they kind of set up the stack. And then you come in with Thielen, who, I mean, it seems like he's undervalued every year. Kirk Cousins is undervalued to some extent. He doesn't have that mobility, that plus rushing edge, you know, that, but I mean, he absolutely can finish like top 12 among quarterbacks. And then Irv Smith, there's been like some negative rhetoric around him from Mike Zimmer. Like, I'm not buying that. I think that's Mike Zimmer just being, you know, an old crank. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to see Irv Smith absolutely play a much bigger role this year. And I really like the way that the Vikings offense, I think the Vikings offensive line, it has a chance to be actually good this year and hasn't been good in a long time. They stole Christian Darrisaw to play left tackle, got him in the first round at number 23 overall. They like were thinking about, they were trying to trade up for him. He wound up just falling into their laps. They've got Garrett Bradbury. He was a first round pick a couple years ago at center. Brian O'Neill has been great. One of the best young right tackles in the league. Ezra Cleveland, who they drafted in the second round last year, he's going to step in and man left guard. And I mean, these are all guys that they've drafted within the top two rounds in the last four seasons. So a lot of young talent on this offensive line. I think that they could take a step.
For sure. I was actually talking to Brandon Thorne a little bit. He's working on his top offensive line rank. He's going to rank every offensive line from 1 to 32 in the draft kit. That'll be up soon. I'm curious to see where the Vikings end up landing. All right, why don't you hit the people with one more, or maybe one or two more of your sneaky stacks, and I've got one more I want to talk about.
I'll go with the Jets, actually. And again, you know, thinking about teams that when you – offenses that when you stack them, like just everybody could beat their ADPs. And I think that that is – a possibility with the Jets because no one's drafting the Jets high, right?
You know, let me say this before you do this. Sure. No one on the Jets has an ADP higher than 88, and that's Michael Carter.
Michael Carter,
No wide receiver has an ADP higher than 107, mm-hmm. and that's Corey Davis. I don't know if I've ever seen a team literally have no one in the top 88 of ADP. It's insane. But anyways, go ahead.
Yeah, and so this is sort of a team that you maybe stack like three guys from after you've already stacked another team as like your anchor stack. And then you could come back and, you know, start taking these guys in the middle and late rounds. No one's going to be drafting Zach Wilson. Early, of course. Zach Wilson has a really fantasy friendly skill set. Elijah Moore, I think, you know, Doug, again, reminds me so much of Doug Baldwin. And I think is going to be an instant impact player. You know, we got Chris Herndon in the George Kittle role. You know, kind of that's a tongue in cheek thing, but I'm sure that'll be a joke that we use. And then I do like Michael Carter as a middle round pass catching RB. And these guys are really cheap. They're playing under Mike LaFleur. This offense should be so much better coached. And again, this is another team that has poured resources into the offensive line. Mekhi Becton was a huge hit for them last year at left tackle. They trade up for Elijah Vera Tucker this year. They said that they had a top 10 grade. Whether or not they did, it doesn't matter. Like, he's going to plug and play left guard. They went out and they signed Connor McDermott last offseason to play center to a three-year, $27 million deal. And then now they're about to sign Morgan Moses. All of a sudden, you got four good offensive linemen with the Jets. You got a fantasy-friendly skill set on their rookie quarterback, and people are not going to be using any draft capital on him. I think that Jamison Crowder also, I think he's going to end up starting. I think that Denzel Mims, at first I thought it was like a motivational tactic, but I'm not sure that Denzel Mims actually fits the kind of Kyle Shanahanian, Mike LaFleur offense, because he's like a jump ball receiver.
Yeah, you know, we're going to talk about that Mims situation more in the next episode. I have a bunch to say about the Jets wide receiver thing because it's really interesting for sure.
And the Mike LaFleur, Kyle Shanahanian offense is built on run after catch.
Yeah.
And, I mean, they've got some good run after catch dudes all of a sudden. You know, Elijah Moore and Jamison Crowder are very good after the catch. So I think that these guys – and I think that Corey Davis also is very good after the catch. And I think that those guys are going to end up being the starting three receivers for the Jets this year.
Yeah, and one thing I would say about this, obviously this isn't going to be your primary stack. Nobody would ever say the Jets are going to be your primary stack, especially in DraftKings best ball where it's so deep and you have so many rounds. You can set up three stacks, and the Jets as your third stack is so cheap, and it does have serious upside to beat it. I think that's interesting. One that you're going to have to pay a little bit more for that I think actually can be a primary stack if you're in a pinch is the Bengals. Joe Burrow played 10 games last year. He was averaging 40.4 attempts per game in those 10, aka he was on pace for 646 pass attempts, which would have led the entire NFL. They've added Ja'Marr Chase, right? Like total freak. His ADP is around 95. Joe Burrow's ADP is around 95. T. Higgins, I think, is actually underrated at like a 57 ADP. And Tyler Boyd, I think, is underrated at a 78.4 ADP. And Joe Mixon, when he goes in the middle of the second round, I think he's underrated too. So, man, you know, I'm irrationally maybe high on the Bengals, but this is a team that is going to be aggressive, play fast, play with a lot of velocity. I mean, they took Ja'Marr Chase when in theory they didn't even really need him. You know what they're going to try to do, get the ball in Joe Burrow's hands and make big plays a ton. So I could see Joe Burrow being among the league leaders in pass attempts, and I could see him being among the league leaders in aggression in terms of ADOT. So yeah, I think that the Bengals have a ton of upside here, and all the guys are reasonably priced as like a mid-round stack. I know people want to throw up when they hear Bengals, though. Evan, what do you think?
Yeah, I just wish they'd done more to address their offensive line, you know, especially with a quarterback coming off a multiple knee ligament tear injury. But I get it, you know. I absolutely got it. The volume should be there.
Any one more you want to talk about? Do you want to talk about Jacksonville? I have some thoughts on Jacksonville. You want to talk about one or any others? You want to do Jacksonville?
Yeah, Jacksonville, because it's another offense that I think could set up to take a big leap. I really like Daryl Bevell. Daryl Bevell has done a really good job. If you look at all the stops he's been at, Seattle, Detroit, he's done a very good job of like identifying the in-house talent and then building the offense to support the in-house talent. And so I think that in that way, he can be a talent maximizer. And then I think that Trevor Lawrence can be a talent elevator, especially as compared to what the quarterbacks that the Jaguars have been trotting out, like Jake Luton and Gardner Minshew and Nick Foles over the past few years. So I just think that everybody is all of a sudden going to look like better players, especially the offensive line. They're returning all five offensive line starters. I think we could see a leap from DJ Chark. Marvin Jones, I think, was just a rock solid add for them. And then Chenault, I mean, his talent is off the charts. You know, during their post-draft press conference, the Jaguars coaches were kind of asked about Laviska Chenault, and they didn't really express very much like enthusiasm about him. You know, he's an inherited player. Everything is new in Jacksonville. But then they get to OTAs and minicamp, and like, dude is unstoppable. Right. And that really should not be a surprise to anyone that really took the time to watch him last year, because he is a vicious, violent post-catch playmaker. And reminds me of like a young Brandon Marshall. They're not going to be like their tight end position is not going to be sucking, you know, targets away from the receivers. Travis Etienne might. We know who their top three receivers are going to be. And I think that the target distribution could be fairly narrow there. And everybody's just going to look a lot better with Trevor Lawrence under center.
Yeah, I agree that they're going to look a lot better. My concern with the Jacksonville stack is I think we could get it wrong. Like, I think DJ Chark is going to be the guy that breaks out biggest, but it could be Marvin Jones. It could be Laviska Chenault. It could be Travis Etienne. I think that Urban is kind of a Dalton. He's going to pound the ball some with Carlos Hyde and James Robinson. And so we could be right that Jacksonville's offense takes a leap forward and be on the wrong guys. And that would make me kind of sick, but I agree with you that from an individual player perspective, all these guys have good chances. And, you know, on the Chenault Etienne thing, like, I'm a little worried that they think Etienne is like they're playing overlapping with Chenault too much. You know what I mean? Like, they could take from each other if they think that James Robinson and Carlos Hyde are actual, they're pure running back. So I don't know if you have a read on that situation at all, but it's just a lot of mouths
to feed. From a role standpoint, it's just where it's all guesswork. It's absolutely guesswork.
Right.
And thankfully, nobody's ADPs are so high that also, although ETN's ADP is pretty high, and really Shark isn't free either. And Chenault is starting to come up. So I don't know. Yeah. Maybe I'll, maybe I have to reassess whether or not to put them in the sneaky stacks article. You're absolutely right that the roles are, we don't know exactly what's going to happen. It makes me sick that we're sitting here talking about Carlos Hyde.
Yeah. Urban Meyer might be just a stone dolt, man. He really might be. I mean, it's definitely possible. Okay. More sneaky stacks will be in Evan's article coming in the draft kit soon. He's also working on the team previews and the top 150 just got a fresh update. On the next episode, we will be talking about rankings changes that Evan has made, a couple big ones, and then also some news alluded to the Jets thing and a couple other news items that I think we need to touch on in the next episode. That's going to do it for this micro look at some stacks we like. For producer Luke, for Evan, I am Adam. Good luck, everybody.